Here we go. I forgot how to start this thing. Hi, I'm Richard Clark.
And I'm Bethany Perkins.
We can't stop talking about the Enneagram.
So we decided to start a podcast where we get it all out of our system.
We're not experts.
We're just obsessed.
It's No Chill Enneagram.
A safe space for Enneagram fanatics.
And a really dumb idea for a podcast. All right, here we go. Hey, everybody. Welcome to No Chill Enneagram. I am Richard Clark. And as usual, I am here with my co-host, Bethany Perkins.
Hi.
Welcome. How's your day going?
It's going pretty good. Yours?
Good. I've played a lot of Fortnite today in between recording episodes of No Chill Enneagram.
Wow.
Yeah. I keep getting like third and second place. So if that means anything to you, I don't know.
It's not first. I know that.
On the Enneagram, I'm number four, but in Fortnite, I'm number two.
Nice.
We're here with a special guest, Danielle Mayfield. DL Mayfield, as you may know her on the internet, but we're going to call her Danielle for the purposes of this podcast. Hey, Danielle.
Hey, Richard. Hey, Bethany.
Hey.
I'm so excited to have you because I feel like I've known you on the internet for a really long time, but we never really get to just talk.
I know. Have we met in real life? I kind of forget.
We have not. We
Isn't
have
that
not.
Weird. I was like, I think we have, but then no.
Yeah, I think we've had a number of situations where we like were going to or almost did, yeah. And for various reasons it kind of fell through. We keep missing each other's conferences, basically.
That's true.
That's how it is on the internet.
We could meet because we both live in Portland.
Oh, my gosh. Snap.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I live in Northeast Portland.
Oh, that's like another world away
Is it?
From me.
Oh. Yeah. What part do you live in?
I live in?
In
like way outer southeast.
Oh, okay.
Way out.
Okay. Nice.
Danielle, you do a lot of things. You're a writer. I think that's your like fundamental thing you do. But what are some other things you do?
Yeah, it's funny you should say that. I never know what to say about what it is I do, but I do some writing. Mm-hmm. I have a degree in teaching English to speakers of other languages. So I do teach some English classes for immigrant and refugee women in my neighborhood.
Nice.
And I am a mom with two kids who are 3 and 7. And so that takes up a lot of my time. And mm-hmm. mostly I'm just like a really intense neighborhood busybody. So I come from that like intentional community Christian world, and used to be like a support raising missionary. And now I just live in my neighborhood and really involved in what's going on, and hang out with mostly Muslim refugee women. So yeah, that's what I do.
Awesome. Yeah. You've written a long time about sort of, I guess, how would you put it? Like social justice, social activism,
yeah,
those sort of things?
I think I'm starting to hone in on what drives me in my writing. And I think I'm really obsessed with the ethics of what it means to love your neighbor in an unjust and unequal society. So yeah. I think that's what I am just trying to do in my life. And then that's what I end up writing about.
Awesome.
Yeah,
I love that.
Awesome.
And
yeah.
And just because this is relevant to my interests, you wrote two cover stories for CT, if I recall.
I did.
You've written a bunch for CT, but two cover stories in particular for Christianity Today, in case people don't know what CT means. They're great. They're like really good pieces, in my opinion.
And they're kind of, especially that first one is kind of Enneagram 1-y. Mm. You know,
awesome.
I didn't know I was one, but it was all about
why I don't drink alcohol.
And
you shouldn't
I'm a really
either.
Principled person about it. Yeah. So that's what I wrote.
It's the best. It's like so good because it comes at it from a totally different angle than like the normal thing.
Like a feminist argument, like an argument that looks at, you know, communities that have been most disadvantaged by alcohol abuse and and also living with your neighbors in mind. If you have a bunch of friends and neighbors who are addicts, you know, it starts mm-hmm. to change the way you go about, like, say, celebrating alcohol or Instagramming it or whatever. So
totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Speaking of, so you mentioned you're a one. Yes. When did you, you have like an interesting path to becoming a one. Tell us about that.
I do. Okay. So when I started to get into the Enneagram, it must have been like 5 years ago. My husband, Crispin, was sort of getting into it. He had this super thick, fat book. I don't even know
which one
it was.
I think I know the one you're talking about. I've seen it too. It's looks, like, I can't even go there.
Yeah,
when
it looks
I
like
look
a textbook. And I just remember being like, I cannot even do this. But I took the online test and it said I was a 4. Mm-hmm. And I was in the process of writing my book at the time. And so I was like, yes, like I'm a moody artist and like nobody gets me. And I was having a really hard time with both my agent and my editors, just pushing back a lot. Like, you need to make things clearer. You need to make it easier. Like, stop being so arty or whatever. And so I was like, oh, I'm such a 4 and like nobody gets me. And I just thought that for many years. And then, so my book came out. It's called Assimilate or Go Home, Notes from a Failed Missionary and Rediscovering Faith. And the whole publishing process was horrible for me. And just getting feedback was really horrible. It kind of felt soul crushing. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, I'm just an artist and this sucks and whatever. So then last year, my husband was like, hey, he was listening to The Road Back to You, which is your competition. So I'm sorry about that.
There's no competition between us and them.
They're done now. That podcast is done. That's so they're not our competition.
We should try to steal their audience, the other though. One. Yeah.
But Bethany and I have a plan that we are going to go to both of Suzanne and Ian and say... we will stop doing this show if you come on it.
Yep.
Otherwise, we're just going to keep going.
Yeah, we can't stop until we get Ian and Suzanne. Yeah.
Suzanne Stabile. Yeah, I'll just pretend to be
Suzanne
here.
Suzanne Stabile.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That was a good impression, whoever that was.
Today, both of us.
I can't do it. I'm not going to try, but she is very soothing to listen to.
She so is extremely.
And that's why typology, it's just not the same without Suzanne.
Yeah.
I'm
well, you know she has her own podcast too, right?
You know, I didn't know that.
The Enneagram Journey.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. You didn't know about that?
I should look into that.
You should.
Yeah. Okay. You should. Well, anyways, they changed my life because my husband was listening to an episode about an Enneagram 1. And he was like, you have to just listen to it. And so I never did because I was like, ones are boring and stupid. And that's not what I am. Like, whenever I'd read about the Enneagram or listen, I would just glaze over at any mention of the one. I didn't understand it, whatever.
That is so interesting.
Finally, on a road trip, my husband just like puts on this episode. It was all about the inner critic of the Enneagram 1.
Yeah.
And he was like, Danielle, I don't think most people live their life with the kind of voice that you have inside your head.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? Everybody has this constantly telling them how they could be better and do better. And they didn't do it as good. And they have to work harder next time. And he's like, no, honey, they don't.
No.
And so it's actually a really profound moment for me. And it's helping me a little bit give myself grace, which I hope eventually helps me be less judgy of others. Right. That's like the end goal now for me is kind of understanding that I do live with such an intense inner critic and going back to like those core, what is it, like your childhood core wound
childhood
or whatever,
your core fears.
When I think about the 4, I'm like, yeah, that doesn't mean anything to me to be special or to be seen. But as Enneagram 1, like wanting to be good, like I grew up wanting to be a missionary. Age 6, I wanted to be a missionary and like save all the people in Madagascar. For some reason, that's where I really wanted to go. And also my husband was like, listen, you think you're a 4, like you're really unique. He's like, your life is really unique because you are living by these intense ethics. He's like, but you don't want to be unique. You want everybody to live just like you. And that's why you write, is because you're trying to convince people. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's so true.
Yeah.
So I do feel unique. I feel lonely sometimes, but I don't want to be. I would love it if everybody moved into my neighborhood and like wanted to live with their neighbors in mind like I do. And so that was also a really interesting revelation for me. So I want to say I think mistyping does happen. I also think I was in an unhealthy place. So I know ones can, you know, be like a 4 when they're unhealthy when I took the test. But also sometimes you just need that close person in your life to kind of confirm or even gently nudge you to say, I think you maybe got it wrong. So I'm really grateful. But it was like really life-changing for me, actually. Like, truly.
That's awesome.
Danielle, I'm fascinated by your switch from 4 to 1 in particular, because I am a 4 and I relate so hard to so many of the very subtle emotional nuances you talk about on the internet and in your writing. All I'll say is I feel like on Twitter, like once every 2 weeks, I will reply to you with a 100 emoji or something.
You know, Twitter is an interesting place for an Enneagram 1. And
tell us about that.
I just need to be really careful with it. I feel like it's interesting, and you guys can help me with this. You know, like I even mentioned, so one, when they're unhealthy, acts like a 4. But I am actually trying to get to this place where, so ever since things went a little insane politically, I did used to do a lot of creative writing back when I more considered myself a 4. I would do things that were more exploratory. You know, there wasn't a strong, like, maybe imperative always implied. Usually there was, but not always. And so then once actually the election happened in 2016, I just thought I have got to start reaching my people, specifically trying to help Christians care about refugees and immigrants in the United States. And so I just completely flipped a switch writing wise. And now I am trying to dial it back and be like, there is a, I need more nuance in my life. I need less black and white thinking. I need less self-righteousness, less judgment. I need to open myself up to these deeper streams of nuance, which has to be based in a place of love. And so Twitter, for me, it's like I get the most validated when I am extreme and angry.
Oh, yeah.
And self-righteous. And there's plenty of reasons to be all those things, honestly.
Yeah.
But still to have that constantly validated is really bad for me spiritually. And so trying to take
that's
some
really
breaks.
Good self-awareness.
Well, I think I resonated with that journey. I was in also in a place where when that happened, I was like, I want to make sure I'm doing the right thing here. I'm doing all the right things. And we even worked together on some of these things.
Right.
Like I was editing you at that time at one point. So yeah, maybe that's the real reason. And it also makes sense that when I am healthy, I go to 1.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are not, you go to 4. So we're meeting each other in your least healthy moments and my most healthy moments.
Yeah.
In theory.
In theory.
In theory.
I will say I mostly have just like read things online or, you know, I listened to that one liturgist episode about the types and I read The Road Back to You. And going back, I still don't, there's nothing that jumps out at me about the one. I mean, there's definitely some stuff there, but a lot of it, like all the anecdotes are like an Enneagram one needs to have a really tidy house or like they're really principled at work and keep their coworkers on task. And I'm like, what? My house is a mess, like books everywhere. I do not like clean, you know. So I'm like, I'm not a perfectionist. Like I would never characterize myself as a perfectionist. And then again, it was my husband who was like, you are an ethical perfectionist. Like you think through the implications of your theology, of your actions, of every single choice, you know, down to like where I buy my clothes, like I have to do thrift stores, right? Or what kind of meat I buy, to where I send my child to school, to, you know, I've, and I, in my mind, I think everybody does this, which I think people do, but he again was sort of like, not everybody runs through it the way you do. Which is the interesting thing about the Enneagram. In one way, it makes you feel good. You're like, there's other people like me. And then you're like, but there's a bunch of people who aren't. And hopefully helps you have some grace for that. So that's why I want to throw it out there. You don't have to be really clean and neat and tidy or like, you know, OCD about certain things. Although, sorry, maybe we shouldn't use that as a term. But some of, I think there are some of us out there who have this intense, like, internal rigidity when it comes to wanting to live a good life and to be good. And that describes me to a T. But.
I can see that. Let's talk about how bad has it gotten. Danielle, like, what's the thing in your life that showed you, oh, my obsession with the Enneagram is off the rails?
Well, it's all relative, right? Yeah. But I will say, in my actual life, like I mentioned, I mostly hang out with women who come from a bunch of different countries. And nobody knows what the Enneagram is. Nobody.
Right.
So
right.
I don't. So in my real life, I don't get to talk about it a ton at all, except for with my husband. And I'm like, I'm tired of talking to him about it. there's only so much we really want to talk to. I will say that I'm not sure I'm like bursting to talk about it, except to say I love getting to the root issues of things. Mm. And so for me, the Enneagram is super connected to this idea of sin.
Yeah.
And the evangelical in me loves that because I do think that we most often sin out of our strengths. And I think that's what the Enneagram kind of gets to.
Hmm.
Like the things that make us awesome are also the ways in which we can hurt people. And so I would just love to talk about this with everybody in the world, but I'm very aware I really hate exclusionary things. And so that has tempered my wanting to talk more about the Enneagram because people get really into it, like annoy the heck out of me.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm like, well, there's like at least five people here who don't know their numbers.
So like,
I'm sorry. I'm always thinking about the person who doesn't know their number and doesn't know the Enneagram.
Me too. I'm hyper aware of that because I am a two. So I just want to help them to know their number and to understand it so that they can learn more about themselves because it has helped me in my life to understand my sin and my coping mechanisms and my dark side and all that stuff. So I literally just want to help other people with it.
It's go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, that's why I'm happy to be on this podcast because I'm like, you guys know your numbers. You want to talk about this. If people are tuning in, they obviously want to hear. I don't have to feel bad about excluding people. So
no,
I get
not
to
at
let
all.
My Enneagram freak flag fly. So thank you.
Fly that freak flag.
Fly it.
It is interesting, like conundrum that I've been thinking about for a while is how to talk about these things in a way that other people can follow you without knowing all the dumb like insider language, like even the numbers at all, because that stuff is so valuable. Like it's really helpful to say like, I just always see something missing and to help someone see like maybe you're seeing something that's missing without having to like subsume them into this awesome cult that is the Enneagram stuff. Danielle, it reminded me as you're talking about this, like how like there is a ugly reality to this whole world that it is like one of the whitest subcultures I'm aware of, and I
you
just
said
wondered
whitest?
What
whitest.
Subcultures I'm aware of, and which is really strange to me because it's also leans a little like progressive and leftist for some reason. And it's just like, I don't know. I wanted to know your take on that. Is there a specific reason you think it seems to be like the privileged personality test?
Well, I mean, if you even think about like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, like it's just at the top of the pyramid. So I spend my life with people who, like, a lot of their brain space is taken up with how the heck are they going to pay rent, you know?
Yeah.
And so I don't think a ton of discussion does go on about, like, core wounds and, you know, and I still think it would be helpful, you know, like, as I still think the Enneagram could be a tool, but I completely understand why it's something that people have picked up as almost a party trick, you know, as a way to talk about themselves more, as a way to do all that stuff. I don't think that's what it's for, but it's definitely probably just comes out of a place of the luxury of having the time to talk and think about it.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into the party trick section of the podcast.
Do it.
Because that's definitely what we're doing right now.
Exactly.
This is a segment we like to call Let's Type People and Things. And today we're going to type some evangelical nostalgia. Some like old cool stuff we used to like when we were kids. Okay. And Bethany, so we need to acknowledge up front, Bethany.
Yeah.
What are you like, 14 or something?
Wow. I'm 25.
You're 25, so you're not going to have
the
same point of reference.
Well, I will be on August 1st, but yeah.
I think Danielle and I are, I don't know if I can say this, but we're in our 30s. Is that okay?
Yeah, I think I'm middle-aged, but people push back on that a little bit.
Middle-aged?
I mean, what is I am 34. That is...
That's not middle-aged.
Yeah.
No, it is not.
I live to 68. That's good. I mean, that's going to be good, I think.
Okay, that just makes me sad.
Yeah, 34 isn't middle-aged.
I think you'll live past 68.
You think so?
Maybe you need better insurance or something. We'll see. Okay,
I don't have any, so...
Okay, well, okay. 68 it is.
Yep. We will pray for you.
Thank you.
Let's type some evangelical nostalgia things. Let's just start with the obvious. McGee and Me.
Yeah.
So are you hosting a podcast about McGee and Me? Is that
Yeah. My husband and I just started doing a whole series on McGee and Me and Me. And nice. So I've only watched like the first episode, like rewatched it. And so here's the deal. McGee is the worst. And I'm gonna say he's a 7.
Really?
He's like this little cartoon person.
He's the worst
person.
And he's a 7.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
He's all over the map. He tells Nicholas to do good things and bad things and is like super of the moment. Like doesn't plan ahead. You know, he encourages him to loosen up and then also eventually to like make things right. I think he's a 7.
So he's less like Jiminy Cricket and more of like a Peter Pan type.
Yeah. Yeah. Because he's not the conscience, but he's not the alter ego. I do not know what McGee is and it bothers me.
A little cartoon man.
He's just a weird thing to get younger children to watch the show. So I think he's a 7.
You know, according to the Enneagram, you are supposed to integrate to type 7. So maybe you're just supposed to become more like him.
I'm supposed to be a McGee?
You're supposed to lean into McGee.
That's depressing.
Yeah. He's your new role model.
Okay. What do you think, Richard? What do you think Nick would be?
Oh, gosh. 4. He's so
really?
Up in his feelings.
Yeah. And he's an artist?
Yeah.
And
exactly.
An inventor? Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I could see that.
How about, let's talk about DC Talk.
Oh, DC Talk. Yeah, okay. Toby is a 3. Okay. He is like the driven one. And then
totally.
Kevin is a 4. He's so
100%, cool. Yes.
And then Michael Tate kind of strikes me as...
6.
No.
No?
I don't know. Michael Tate is like so much going on. Possibly 6 because... He is now like, now he's like pro Trump and stuff.
Oh man.
And I also feel like maybe he attaches himself to whatever like institution he thinks is going to protect him and take care of him. So maybe he's a 6.
All right. So, okay. So on that note, Carmen.
Oh my God.
I feel like this is
an
obvious
he's
an
8.
One.
He is an
Yeah,
unhealthy
definitely.
8.
Is he?
Unhealthy.
He's an 8.
Yes.
Who is going to milk us all for what we've got to give him.
Yeah.
He has no problem lying. He probably thinks he is doing the work of the Lord. That's what I hope.
Oh,
but
wow.
He's actually.
You're going hard on Carmen. Jeez.
I need Carmen to publicly repent.
Wow.
Snap.
Hear that, Carmen?
You just got called out by No Chill Enneagram.
Yeah.
I really have
you
no
don't
chill
come
when it comes to
back
Carmen.
From
I have gone down so many Carmen deep dives. We cannot talk about Carmen right now.
That's awesome.
All right.
I will not stop.
That's great. I never knew Carmen like in his heyday. I just have kind of
he was my first concert
into him
ever.
Now. Oh wow!
And he had little people, we called them midgets in the 90s, on stage being demons, and then he would like with the power of the Holy Spirit, he would knock them off the stage.
Yeah.
And I was 8 and living in Wyoming, and I was like, this is. Amazing.
How? Oh my gosh.
Bizarre. But like they would enact like the spirits of drunkenness and lust and like materialism.
Wow.
And Carmen would like knock them all off the stage. And now I'm like, that
so sad
is
I
so
missed out on
terrible.
That.
All right, let's do the main adventures in Odyssey, guys. People, whoever they are.
No, you have to do one.
I'm not super familiar with Adventures in Odyssey, to be honest.
Okay, well, I did two seasons of a podcast about it, so right. Here we go.
Yeah.
I think Mr. Whitaker could be an 8. Good. But I'm afraid he's a 1 because I really dislike him.
But is he that mean? Like, he's not really like a...
He's not mean, but he's like so sure that he has every answer to the world.
Well, that does sound like a 1. He just never struck me as an 8 mm-hmm. the few times I listened.
Yeah, I think he's a 1, and that makes me sad because I really dislike him. I think Eugene is a 5 because he's all about being a scientist and not thinking about feelings. And... I don't know. The rest of the characters, I don't know them as well, but like Connie, she kind of strikes me as a 7. She's very fun-loving. But yeah, that's kind of the main people that I can think of right now.
Totally. VeggieTales, what about Bob the Tomato?
Oh my gosh.
Okay, this is one that I actually did watch as a kid.
All right, Bethany, what do you think?
Oh my gosh. I don't know, though. I haven't... watched it in so long.
Well, the cucumber.
That I really have nothing.
The Larry. Cucumber's the dumb cucumber. One. Larry the cucumber's the dumb one, and Bob's the smart one, so we know that.
Okay, so maybe I'll go out on a limb and just say that Bob is a 5 because Phil Vischer is a 5.
Oh, interesting.
Oh.
Interesting theory. How do you know Phil Vischer is a 5?
Okay, because I had a dream, as I've told you, where I was trying to figure out Phil Vischer's number.
Oh my gosh.
Enneagram number.
What is happening?
And I tweeted.
I should say that if people don't know, Phil Vischer made VeggieTales back in the day.
Yes. Yeah. And I tweeted him about that, thinking he's never going to see it or respond. But he did, and he responded, and he told me that he's a 5.
Awesome.
Wow. So
no, I could see his Bob wife, doing that. Bob's very much like honed in on like what's the scripture verse.
Yes.
You know, it has to be all about that and trying to be logical and stuff. I don't know.
So Larry's just singing silly songs. So
and he's Larry like, is he a 2 or a 7?
I don't think a 2.
He's always helping Bob. That's how I feel like. He is always like trying to help Bob feel better, not be so angry. And
oh, good point.
Being the right-hand man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's make him a 2.
All right. What about testaments? What number are testaments?
Oh, that is absolutely a 1.
Really?
Yeah, trying to convert people.
The mint with a message. Yeah. But it's not really the right way to do a mint. It's like...
I think they're delicious.
It feels like a 3 to me, like trying to just like look like... I got nothing. Sorry. Trying to succeed at soul winning just cause.
Yeah. Just cause.
Okay. I'll give that to you. But I think inanimate evangelical nostalgic items are going to be hard to type.
Really?
That's just my
That doesn't matter.
Well, I just I'm gonna give you the ultimate pushback to that. The Ichthmus. That thing is an 8 if I've ever seen anything that's an 8.
Oh, I've seen more 8 ones. You know what's an 8? Is Calvin that? Kneeling at a cross. That's an 8, my friend.
Yeah, that's an 8. That's an 8.
Okay.
That's true. Okay. Well, that was Let's Type People and Things. I think it's time to really get down to what we brought Danielle here for in the first place.
Oh, yep.
Let's rank.
Me too. No one's more nervous than me.
Let's rank the Enneagram numbers from best to worst.
This is going to make Bethany so sad. I'm sorry, Bethany. Just.
It's okay. As long as you put me like not the worst.
Well,
I'll be okay.
Let's see what happens. Don't put.
You're not going to be the worst. You're not going to be the worst.
Okay, thank you.
Am I going to be? I might be the worst, huh?
So wait, I rank them, or you guys rank them, or we have a discussion about it?
I think we'll need to lead this conversation.
I could just rattle it off right now. I have not even
thought
about it. Well, let's start at number. Let's see. Do we start at the top. Yeah.
Start at the
best. I think
best.
The tension is with what's at the worst. So let's okay. start at the top.
Yep.
The best is so easy for me, and that's an Enneagram 9.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think we've had that conversation a couple times now.
Yeah. My husband's a 9. And
my
so
roommate's
I'm
a 9.
To it. It's just like the best, especially there's, if you're one.
There's
it's
like here's the argument. Yeah, I think here's the biblical argument: the meek shall inherit
wow.
the earth. That's the argument.
Ooh, we could do a beatitude.
Blessed
for
are
every
the
number.
Peacemakers.
Oh gosh, hold on. I'm writing that for.
There literally is one.
I'm writing that down in our notes for other shows. That's
jam. Those beatitudes.
Thanks for the idea.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Don't steal it.
I won't.
Okay.
Nobody I know cares about the Enneagram, so
don't steal your idea back from us, please.
Right, okay, okay. I bequeath it to you.
Okay,
okay, so
we
9
all
is
agree
the
on
best.
9, yeah.
Now I don't know. I really enjoy 5s if they're healthy.
Man, I don't okay. know.
I don't know about that either. 5s are the opposite of 2s.
Interesting.
So. Yeah, in like every way.
I feel like I would love 2s if I had any around me because as a very driven 1, mm-hmm. I often feel like pretty lonely and like I just need somebody out here helping me. And so
yeah.
I think
you need
I should
2s
put
in your life.
Okay, let's do 9, 5, 2 because okay. I really appreciate like the logical feedback of a 5, which can help mm-hmm. get people out of their ruts. And then the 2s
yeah,
who can actually
true.
Help. Mm-hmm. Then I'm going to say Enneagram 1s would be number 4 because we do need some people who have that core value of being good. I think that's one of the better driving forces to have in your life, but maybe I'm just mm-hmm. partial to that.
I have a 1 wing, by Ooh, the way.
Yeah.
I relate a lot to 1s.
Okay. So then I love 4s because... They
because you thought you were one.
Great Yay. Art. I mean, when they're like obsessed with themselves, it can get really annoying, obviously. But they can really help me personally, like find beauty and finding the value in beauty when sometimes I just think of the world as purely black and white utilitarianism. You know, what can mm-hmm. we do to help everybody right now? So
who are the people I'm better than? What are the numbers?
yeah.
3 is left.
7.
6 is left.
She doesn't like 7. 3, 7, 6.
Okay, I don't know 3, 7, any 6s. I don't know a
and
lot
8.
About 6s. So let's put 6s next just because I don't know a lot about them.
Underappreciated, okay, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Even yeah. by me, but. They're...
Yeah, so I don't know what to do with a 6, so let's just like put them in the middle. And then. Okay.
They probably should be higher than 4, to be honest, but whatever. I'm not gonna
because we need those yeah. artists. Now wait, what is left? 3, 8, and
I would just say without the 6s, all the artists would be dead.
7.
7.
3. Sorry. Yeah, yeah, yeah. 6s add that hypervigilance, keeping everyone safe.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 7's after 6s? Is that what you said?
No.
No.
Let's say a 3 next.
Okay.
Because they can. Get a lot of stuff done, and I really mm-hmm. appreciate that.
Yeah,
I don't always appreciate that need for achievement, mm-hmm. But I love that they can get stuff done. And then let's do a 7, just because I don't understand sometimes how to like nudge 7s towards healthiness, because a lot of it mm-hmm. can read like escapism to me.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. but I'm a really serious yeah. person, so I probably need. More 7s in my life, but I just don't understand them. But I
Congrats.
Love to have a 7 friend right now, but I don't.
Congratulations, 8s.
I'm sorry, 8s, you're so intense.
You lose.
The way that you always want to talk to me about conflicts is really intense. And
do you have,
do have
people you're close to that are 8s?
I do, and they're all... women, and I love them all, so I don't want to say like I don't love 8s. I do.
Yeah, you love your 8s.
The conflict of some 8s mm-hmm. is like super jarring to me, the conflict style.
Yeah,
so and maybe that's just because
like
I love
conflict.
9 so much that
oh yeah it makes sense.
Do you
think
that you
have
a 9 wing?
I don't, but maybe. I want to.
You don't?
I that's okay. like it was if I'm thinking about where am I moving in a direction of health, I would love my wing to be a 9 just because I'm assuming that means I am longing for like a peaceful resolution for all people, instead of sometimes the way I go about life is like, I wish you were all as upset as me. And that's not a great, that's not very sustainable. And so I want my end goal to be less conflict. That's not really how I operate through life. I tend to like create conflict, but hopefully not always.
So just to recap.
I feel bad. I don't want to put eights at the end.
So just to
it's okay.
Someone's got to be actually bad and terrible. So
that is the best one to.
No, we can't put sixes.
No, I really think eights are the best one to put at the end because they are confident and they don't care what you think about them.
That's true.
So like literally they don't
eights
care.
Eights and sevens are both like whatever.
Good. Yeah. Then I did it perfectly. That's great.
Threes are
also,
deeply hurt.
You did it perfectly.
Threes are deeply hurt.
I have to point out, do you guys know about stances at all?
Like power stances?
No, like stances as they relate to the Enneagram.
Oh, no. No.
Okay, so there are three stances, and it's the dependent stance, the withdrawing stance, and the aggressive stance. Mm-hmm. And 3, 7, and 8 are the aggressive stance, and you put those as your last.
Interesting.
Three.
What are withdrawing? Those are
four. Withdrawing are 4, 5, and 9, and dependent is 1, 2, and 6.
Sounds like 4 needs to move up.
No, I think 4 is fine where it is.
So we have done it. We have ranked the Enneagram numbers. We're going to put these on like a little Enneagram on a little Instagram picture and get it out there and then attribute it to Danielle and let people share it and like it.
I just have to say,
it'll last forever.
As a 2, this makes me extremely uncomfortable, and I love everyone. And even if I didn't, I would not tell people that I didn't. So
we'll run
this
by.
I think Richard Gore is very upset at us right now.
Yeah, definitely. Is he? We'll run it by him and just see what he thinks. Here they are. Number 1 is 9. Number 2, this is so stupid. Number 2 is 5. Number 3 is 2. Number 4 is 1. Number 5 is 4. Number 6 is 6. That's appropriate.
Yeah.
Number 7 is 3. Number 8. Is 7 and number 9 is 8. Man.
Oh gosh.
That was awesome.
Hard. That was hard.
That was awesome.
I feel
Thank
like
you
we
for
really
doing
accomplished
that.
Something here today.
We
All
did.
Right.
Yeah. We figured it out.
Now that we have that settled, can we make Enneagram slang happen? We do this every episode. What?
Thank you.
What do you mean? Wait. Okay. So that was can we make
Next
Enneagram
segment.
Slang happen.
I agree with you.
Our other segment is called...
I've been saying no from the beginning.
Our other segment is called Self-Care for Specific Numbers. So, Danielle, we're going to give you an Enneanum, and then you give an example of a type... You give a self-care tip for that specific Enneanum, whether it's Enneaglam or something else.
Whoa, you are just trying to like shove the slang into this
he is.
Good job, Richard.
Yeah, he feels really misunderstood that we just shot it down. So
well,
he's gonna make
it
happen.
I feel like Danielle was wanting so hard at me that I needed to.
Yeah,
it's too exclusionary. Slang is too exclusionary.
That's
Richard.
Fair.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Anyways, give me the nom or whatever you call it.
Give me the nom. All right. Enneanum number one. Enneanum number one.
Wait, do I have to give advice to each number?
Yeah.
Not
if you're
just
a number
self-care.
One, if you're a number one, what should you do for self-care?
What do you recommend?
Oh my gosh, this is the hardest one.
We can go. We can do what we did last.
You want to go backwards?
We can rotate if you want.
I have the same advice for every number.
Oh.
Okay.
Well, that's kind of a boring segment.
I'm very interested in this.
It's because it's amazing advice.
That's just regular self-care. That just doesn't even go on a self-care podcast.
What do we need the Enneagram for anymore?
Yeah, so this is what I say. I say for self-care, like self-care is really about building resilience and it's not about numbing out. So whatever you do, according to your Enneagram type, whatever you do to numb out, you know, like, stop doing that.
Yeah.
And instead,
stop.
start thinking about ways to build resilience. And so for me as Enneagram 1, I do have to try and let go of the weight of the world. And so there's a lot of different ways I can do that. But for me, self-care is taking a step back, saying you can't fix everything, you can't save everybody. That's God's job. And so I do a lot of things like yoga, running, like different prayer apps. I do a prayer night, all these things that just I'm trying to let go of this burden I've put on myself to save the world. And so ways I can find to let go of that is my form of self-care. So
that's really good.
Yeah, it sounds like you understand self-care better than most.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, take a bath. I don't know. I'm like, fine, if that builds your resilience.
I didn't want you to say take a bath.
Okay.
What I want you, so here's
buy
the deal.
Buy expensive eye cream. Like, no.
How?
Unless, unless that builds resilience. Somehow.
How does a one, well, you already said some ones for ones, because you are a one.
Yeah.
How's a number two build resilience?
Again, I would say, like, you have to do something where you let go your need to be helping, right? So you have to find something where you can just let go of that and instead be poured into, allow yourself to be known and valued for who you are and not what you do. So maybe you watch Mr. Rogers.
Okay, twos watch
say,
Mr. Wazzers.
Like
Mr. Why did I say Mr. Rogers? What about threes? Okay. What should threes do?
Oh, they have to fail spectacularly at something.
Oh,
on
yeah.
purpose?
But is yeah. that
no.
self-care, though?
Well, then they have to be gentle to themselves with that.
I feel
so
this.
Maybe even...
How do they go out, like, I'm,
no,
so
here's what
I'm
you
a
do.
Three, I'm going to go out in the world and fail today.
Here's what you
something
do.
Something that you can't excel at, maybe.
Yeah, here's... Or something with no stakes that you just don't, like, it's... This podcast is a perfect example because I have a three wing, and that three wing affects me greatly in terms of, like, when something I do fails, it's like I'm being rejected. Mm-hmm. This podcast is going to be hardcore rejected by a large portion of my network, right?
So this is your self-care. This is great.
This is 100%. And I felt it too. Like I told Jennifer the other day, like, I don't know why, but I haven't felt this energized in a very long time. And it's because I don't do anything that doesn't have stakes involved. So that's that's my advice for fours and threes is like, do a project that it does not really matter if it fails.
Yeah, and I would say for a four, something fun, that's probably, good. Right? Doing something that's fun and no stakes. Yeah, I think that's great. That's great advice.
What about fives?
I think fives should, like, watch the saddest movie in the world and let themselves cry.
Oh.
I don't know.
Connect with
my
their
advice
emotions.
For fives would be, like, get upset about something happening in the world and really allow yourself to lament. So not just being sad, but like practice the Christian spiritual discipline of lamenting.
That's good.
What is wrong in the world and really letting yourself be connected and moved to the place where you have to like publicly witness that with other Christians. I don't know. That's just what I think.
What about number six?
I don't know about those sixes.
Maybe Richard, you could do this.
Yeah.
Because your wife is a six.
She is. And what she has to do is get out of the house. It almost doesn't matter what she does after that. But if she's away from her responsibilities, I think that's the key. Is like get away from anything where you have to provide, you're expected to provide stability or safety or where there's any expectation and just go. So like, we've talked many times about seeing a movie alone, but that's a good place for a six, I think.
Oh, that's great. I like that.
And just also like, yeah, that's enough. Seven.
Self-care for a seven is okay. This one, I don't know what to say because it seems like sevens can be really good at like all of the like consumeristic and capitalistic materialistic ways of self-care. So I would just say you really got to dig deep into like how can you build yourself up so that you can get back up the next day ready and engaged to do the work you're supposed to do. So I'm not sure what that would be, but it doesn't necessarily look like doing things to forget.
Yeah, it's a tough one for sevens, I think.
I think sevens need to slow down and like not do something and not consume anything,
not
like
consuming.
You said.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sevens have like this lust for life, and like it kind of can feel like they can never have enough of anything. Mm-hmm. So I think just to, yeah.
So
to
maybe
not
more
consume
like the
anything.
Meditation or something.
I'm going to make a recommendation that you focus on your closest friends, like one-on-one time. Deep time with your friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
I think that would energize a seven and would like get them going a little deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Eights.
I don't know. I have no clue about
eight. They're useless. There's nothing that can be done for eights.
the worst number.
I'm just kidding. Eight.
I mean, I love them, but they also seem to be...
Fine.
Pretty good at like... taking care of themselves.
Yeah.
You know? And
well,
so
I don't know about that though, because
I just know healthy ones, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. But I feel like because they're an aggressive type, they're a body type, they can just go without ceasing and like just abuse themselves because they never stop.
Hmm.
So
well,
I don't know, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay, I really want to say the phrase "treat yourself" to
treat
some
yourself.
Number, but yeah. I don't know which number to
I
say.
I feel
that
like
to.
Nine is the right one.
Okay, nine. That's what I'm probably waiting for.
Or two.
Yeah. What about nines?
Oh, nines! Can you just accept that you're loved?
Are you not gonna say "treat yourself"? I thought you were gonna say "treat yourself."
And can you treat yourself, but not by buying something unethical?
Good idea.
Okay. We go. I love nines, and I just want them to know that they're okay.
Cool.
Yeah.
Even if there's conflict in the world, you're okay. And don't take a nap. That's not what you should be doing.
Oh my!
For self-care.
God. See,
I feel like naps
Richard,
come up on every
you.
Podcast we have.
And I'm trying to make a case that naps are like nine's thing.
Oh, they're like my husband's like a stress napper.
Yeah.
Is he a nine?
Same with my roommate.
Yeah, and I cannot nap unless I am deathly ill. And so it makes me like doubly annoyed at his little stress naps.
Yeah, I feel like I feel like fours nap a lot too, is the case that I'm making.
Oh, okay.
Because fours take in all of the emotional energy as well. And it's more work than just existing. You know what I mean? It's hard out there for...
It's so hard for you, Richard. It's so hard for you.
All right.
Yes,
well,
we see you and your pain.
Well, for our last segment, Danielle, this has been really fun. And we wanna thank you by paying it forward to back to you. I think that's how paying it forward works. You just pay them back directly. Like when someone pays for your Starbucks and then you just chase them down and pay them back immediately.
Like aggressively pay them back, yeah.
Or you
so
just
nice.
Give them your drink.
Right.
Yeah.
So we just need you to tell us a problem you're having in your life or like an issue you're having that you need help with. And we're going to give you some advice through the lens of the Enneagram.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I really wish I had something light and frothy to say, but I don't.
Okay.
This is like we're something ready. That's really serious.
Oh, no.
For me, which is, I am a pretty awesome wife, and I'm an okay mom, and I'm a terrible friend. As far as, like,
me too.
This weird, like, westernized concept of friendship, like Sex in the City or I can't think of any other, like, female buddy comedies, but... Like Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, I just don't, I'm not able to maintain those types of relationships. Again, most of my friends are people who aren't from my same culture. We don't share the same, like, language even. We don't share the same religion. And so I love those friendships. They give me a lot of life. But, like, those heart-to-heart, deep female friendships, which, you know, I'd love them if we could share some of these same, like, religious values and stuff. I just cannot do it because I am so ethically rigid that it ends up getting in the way. So for me, I'm like, you need to live in my neighborhood. You need to like send your kid to the failing elementary school like I do. Like if you homeschool, you're out. You're out. I can't be best buds with you because, you know, you're making this choice. And so I'm only now 34 starting to be like, oh, yeah, this is like not great. To go through life like this. At the same time, I cherish like my life and the friendships in it. But the best friend thing is real for me. And I don't know if that's Enneagram 1 thing or not. So if it is Enneagram 1, let's talk about it. Otherwise, let's just like stop this and
I'm just a terrible person. Am a terrible friend, but it has more to do with self-involvement and laziness than it does the, moral rigidness, which is where you kind of lost me in terms of relating to it. But it does sound like a one thing, right? Like, obviously, the reason.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, friendship, I feel I can say is something I am good at, because I am a two and I have a deep need for relationship and intimacy. I'm also single, so friendships are just my lifeline. Friendship and family. So, and I'm trying to think, like, I don't have close one friends that I know of. Like, I don't think any of my really good friends are one.
Yeah, same here. You're doomed, Danielle.
You're not doomed. This solitary life where I judge everybody. I mean, sometimes it feels like that. But I will also say my place in life is the cool people I know all have a bunch of little kids. We all have a bunch of little kids, and I just like cannot do very much mom and kid play. It's like my two kids are awesome, but they take it all out of me.
Yeah.
And so like trying to have, I love deep convos, you know, I love them. And so trying to have a deep convo will, like, our very securely attached children like keep interrupting us because they know we will respond to them. You know, I'm like, I can't do this. I can't, I don't, it's not very life-giving to me. And so maybe this is also just a stage in life. I wish I had more single friends, to be perfectly honest, and older friends.
I was going to say, I think you just need more single friends, maybe.
Yeah, so we, my wife and I have two kids, and then we have our best friends are, we have one, we have, I think, two, we, well, we have some who, like, half of our best friends are single, and the other half have no kids. They're married, but have no kids.
Lucky ducks.
And it's amazing.
That's very terrible.
It's genuinely amazing, but we are starting to get to the point where we feel like we are taking more than we are giving. And and I'm feeling a lot of guilt about it. I literally had a lunch with one of my single friends who was like, I feel like you don't really like the number of times you've not taken the chance to come hang out with me. It just makes me, like, I know it's not reality, but it makes me feel like you don't really care all that much.
Yeah.
And
oh my
gosh. And that was a seven.
I feel that so much.
That was a seven who said that to me. So it was serious.
I feel that. Oh my gosh. My friends are, like, my close friends are starting to have children.
Yeah, it's rough.
It's fine. It's, everything's fine.
It's not fine. Yeah. It's a game changer.
It is.
It is a huge game changer.
I'm like 7 years into it, almost 8 years into it. I still haven't adjusted.
But I would say,
I'm grieving, to be honest.
I would just say, we have to collectively, we have to, like, it can't be paying it back. It has to be, this, like, what is the thing I can give? If it's not time or resources, you need to think deeply, Bethany, about what you want, what you want other than those things from your friends with kids. Because I would love to give anything I could to my friends who don't have kids. But, like, there's a very specific, like, range of things I have available.
Oh, yeah. I could care less about that in some ways, which is why I'm like, that's why I'm a terrible friend, is people know. They know right away that if we have like a shared vision or values, that I'm like, yes, let's do this. But if it's just fulfilling like a friendship need, people just, you know, they learn quickly that I can't be there to fulfill that. And this also goes into some interesting things about the fact that I am a writer. I have a somewhat public part of my life and people reach out to me all the time. And so in some ways I'm like, oh, I know so many people. They all really need stuff from me, or, you know. But I'm just looking for, like, I would say a co-laborer, almost like I'm a neighborhood pastor, and I just want like another pastor to come do what I'm doing. And that's just not going to happen right now. And so I'm trying to be like, how do I just say this is how it is and that's fine? Or do I keep trying to find those kinds of relationships? I'm sorry, you guys. I'm just talking
No, that's interesting.
Well, I don't know. This is hard. But are you willing to like adjust your expectations of like what a friendship would be? Like maybe not making the baseline qualification like they are so passionate and ready to jump into everything that I'm doing.
Right.
But like maybe it's just someone who you get along with and like talking to, and over time you can kind of like help them to grow to be passionate about what you're passionate about, but that may not be the place where you can start with someone.
Right.
I don't know.
No, I think that's great. And this is what my husband has told me. And so I do think as I hopefully move towards health, you know, I will be kinder to myself and kinder to other people, and mm-hmm. just able to accept the places of life we're at. But I'm also such a pragmatic person. So, I mean, we go to church and there's really cool people at church. But again, I'm like, you have little kids. We live 30 minutes away. Like, we're not going to be besties.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even try sometimes, but.
Well, it sounds like we solved your problem.
You certainly did.
Yep.
So.
I think, like, in the course of this conversation, you've gained, like, 3 best friends.
Well, so. Bethany, you live in Portland.
I do.
Just come on over.
Okay. I mean, I will.
I'm just laughing because the odds don't seem good that you guys will become friends.
Based off of everything I just said. But this is true. This is real life for me.
This has been No Chill Enneagram. It is hosted and produced by Richard Clark and Bethany Perkins. Edited by Richard Clark. Theme music is Max Flashback by Lee Rosevere. We want to hear from you. If you're an Enneagram number 9, 4, 2, or 7, feel free to leave a review on iTunes. If you are a 6, please only do this if you trust us. If you are an 8 or a 1, please do not leave us a review on iTunes. But you can feel free to reach out to us on Twitter, where we'd love to be challenged by you or hear from your overflowing inner critic. Our Twitter handle is @NoChillEnneapod. That's @NoChillEnneapod. Enneagram number 5s, please include us in your next exhaustive list of hilarious podcasts. And 3s, you can just give us credit after we inspire you to do whatever amazing thing you're going to do next. If you are a number 1 through 9 and you haven't already, subscribe to this podcast wherever podcasts are subscribable.